Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, sitting here in Rochester on July 11th. We have six oral arguments before us today. Marshall, will you call the first case? I believe you're both familiar with our rule speech. You will have 15 minutes for argument, and counsel for appellant, you'll also have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to take it. Please introduce yourself for the record, because we are recording this when you come to the podium. And after that, counsel, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Daniel Dota. I represent appellant Pocahogo in this case. This case arose out of a billing dispute between Pocahogo and respondents who provided excavation work on a time and material basis for the construction of a daycare facility on property that was owned by Pocahogo. It's about billing more than the parties agreed for the time and materials put into this project and for respondents' excavation equipment that actually was sitting idle on the property. They orally agreed that respondents would do this work on a time material basis. To keep the cost down, the parties agreed that respondents would not charge an upcharge to the time and materials. Respondents brought to the site up to 7 pieces of equipment. That equipment was billed at an hourly rate, typically, and the hourly rate covered both an operator and the machine. The highest hourly rate was $150 an hour for a backhoe, and the lowest rate was $100 an hour. There was some equipment that was also there that was used and billed on a daily basis. Respondent's owner was Paul Cassidy. He is the sole owner of Irish Excavating and the sole employee for Irish Excavating. He's the only person that operated respondent's equipment. He did not keep any timekeeping records of his work on this job, and he worked for 16 days from August 7 to September 2, 2015.
Mr. Dota, here's where I see the flaw of your case in terms of the argument, because you've alleged that there was unjust enrichment. The problem that I have as an appellate judge, we're a reviewing court, and we have specific findings of fact made by the judge in this case. And as it comes to the billing method, the judge actually made a determination that Cassidy's billing method, that there was no evidence that the billing method was immoral, illegal, unconscionable, inappropriate, or bad, had a bad motivation. We're looking at a credibility determination, and I don't know what you propose that this court do in terms of overlooking those very factual findings in terms of the hearing court's decision.
I understand, Your Honor, and the standard is clear air for overturning a trial court's findings of fact. And in this case, we are arguing that there's at least 2 clear errors regarding the trial court's determination of the time and materials arrangement between the parties. The first clear error made by this court was failing to make the critical finding regarding Mr. Cassidy's own work time on this project. Here the court made some findings, very minimal findings regarding that. It found that respondents billed 16 days starting on August 7 to September 2 and made no other findings regarding his work. Nowhere in the court's finding does it make the critical finding of Mr. Cassidy's own work time on this project. On its invoices that were submitted in evidence in this case, respondents claimed to have worked over 423 and a half hours on that 16-day period. That averages out to 26 hours per day for one employee. That's not even possible. Mr. Cassidy, however, at trial testified that he had averaged about 10 to 12 hours of work on this project on that 16-day period.
And then the court did acknowledge that. The court went on to say that it took Cassidy at his word that the standard billing practice was not only for the time that he was working, but also for the time that the equipment sat idle, and that that was his practice.
Well, that's another finding.
It may not have been a finding I would have made if I was hearing the case, but that is a determination that the district court made.
I understand, Your Honor. Findings that are not reasonably supported by the evidence in the record as a whole, however, are in error. And we believe that the important finding of Mr. Cassidy's hours on this work project was critical in this case, and mainly because that's how he billed his equipment, by the hours that it was operated for an operator in a machine.
And he says that's how he's always done it, and that was what he intended to do. So the unjust enrichment claim, when you, it may seem that he got a lot more than he should have got, but how does that bear out on an unjust enrichment claim? If he says, that's what I did, that's how I always do it.
Well, in addition on the unjust enrichment claim, Your Honor, the court also concluded that Pocohogo paid $1,600 more than the actual cost of the materials and $10,902 more than the actual cost of the subcontractors. So in addition to Mr. Cassidy's time, there were the materials and the subcontractor costs. The problem here is that both Pocohogo and respondents agreed that there would be no upcharge to the cost of the time and materials, including the subcontractor costs. And the court made some express findings of this, that there would be no upcharge to these costs. And then, of course, the court also concluded that respondent standard billing equipment on the site is charged by the hours Mr. Cassidy is there. And I think that's what is in the court's memorandum.
But this is the problem, and this is where, of course, now as counsel after the fact, there's no written agreement. And if there's no written agreement, the parties didn't bother to reduce this to writing. The court has nothing to do but judge credibility, because I'm going to struggle with your client's name, Pocohogo, says one thing, and then we turn around and have Cassidy saying something else. And absent a written agreement, how do we decide which is fair or who is portraying it as they understood it?
Well, that's a fair question. Mr. Gander, who was the owner of Pocohogo, actually testified, and it's true, there was an oral agreement. There's nothing in writing. The parties didn't discuss, you know, what the time and materials meant, but there was testimony at trial regarding the time and materials. Mr. Gander testified that, you know, in his 35 years experience, he's been hiring excavators for that period of time, and he's never paid an excavator that wasn't operating the machine. He only paid for an excavator when it was sitting in the saddle and operating the machine. And then there was the testimony of Todd Severson, who was Pocohogo's general contractor. And he testified in his 15 or 16 years of experience, he's hired excavators hundreds of times in the Rochester area, and he's never paid for an excavator equipment that didn't have an operator in the seat. So, in contrast that with some of the inconsistencies.
Cassidy, he owned the equipment, didn't he?
That's true, Your Honor. That was all his equipment. There was no indication that he leased that equipment, so there are no other costs.
So essentially what you're saying is this is unfair because he owned the equipment, which basically is like, here's my business, the equipment sits, and I'm charged for it.
That's correct. And again, it was a time and material basis, and it appears as if the respondents are asking that he be able to charge his equipment like a lease, and there was no lease here. This was a time and materials, and time and materials, there's testimony again from Mr. Gander how he explained time and materials. Basically, the time is by the hour somebody is there working, and they're paid a reasonable hourly rate. And of course, there's no dispute that, you know, the respondents' hourly rates are unreasonable here. As I said, the rates were $150 an hour to $100 an hour. Nobody's complaining about that.
So, counsel, what I'm struggling with for this beyond just enrichment, it means there's some question of moral wrong, I think, that needs to be involved. Is the way I read the cases, you know, to enrich themselves at the expense of another that's morally wrong. I mean, tell me, first of all, if you disagree with that, and if you agree with that a lot of the cases at least say that, what can you point to that say this is not just a bad business practice, this is morally offensive?
I agree with what you say, that the case law does describe something having to be morally wrong to be unjust. And here, one of the items that's morally wrong is the fact that they had an oral agreement that only the actual cost of the time and materials were to be charged, and then Mr. Cassidy's equipment. And of course, as I've argued, the materials were overbilled by $1,600, and the subcontractor costs were overbilled by $10,902. We have cited, Pocohogo cited two cases in our briefs that support an unjust enrichment case in a case like this. Dwinell v. Oftal, which is a Minnesota Supreme Court case. In that case, the plaintiff entered into a contract with a general contractor for the construction of a house. And then the plaintiff authorized its mortgagee to make payments from its construction loan on authorization from the general contractor. And then the general contractor authorized a payment to a lumber company who had furnished some lumber to this project. The lumber company, however, received more money than the value of the lumber that it contributed to this project. And the Minnesota Supreme Court said that the lumber company was unjustly enriched and had to pay the money back. Similarly, and more recently, in a case, an unpublished opinion that was decided by this court, called Veal Contracting and Performance Pipelining, the contractor submitted numerous invoices, including overcharges. The owner made those payments, unaware that the invoices were inconsistent with the agreement of the parties, similar to here, and testified that it would not have made those payments had it known of the discrepancies. This court held that the overpayment unjustly enriched that contractor. And here, Pocahogo was unaware that respondents were not billing their actual time and materials, and was adding an upcharge to those materials.
What was the testimony about? They had some prior relationship where Gander and Cassidy had done work. What was the, does the record explain fully what the details were?
Yes, Your Honor, I think it's pretty fully, there's an exhibit, I think it's exhibit number 74. And in May of 2015, respondents did some work for a company called Superior Mechanical. And the connection here is that Superior Mechanical is owned by Jim Gander, who's also an owner of Pocahogo. And on that project, respondents brought to the work site two pieces of equipment. It was the backhoe and the dump truck. And respondents billed for the backhoe, but not the dump truck, even though the dump truck was used to haul sand to the site. And so if it was respondents' standard billing practice, as the court described it, to bill for all equipment he had on his site, well, then why didn't respondent bill for the dump truck in that project?
And your
as
position
well?
Is that one other instance is enough to show some kind of a pattern or conduct between the parties?
I believe so, Your Honor. And there, even in this case, there were inconsistencies in how respondents billed on this project. For example, and the court can refer to, I think, the exhibits. There are summary exhibits here. There's 56, 57, and 58. And all of this information is pretty much encompassed in those three exhibits. But for example, on August 8, 2015, Mr. Cassidy testified that he was on the work site for 8 hours, and he billed his backhoe for 8 hours. Yet on that same date, he billed his Bobcat for only 4 hours. If it was a standard billing practice for him to bill for all his equipment that he had on the site, why didn't he bill his Bobcat for 8 hours? Similarly, on August 16, he was there for 10 hours, and he billed his Bobcat, his backhoe, and his drum roller each for 5 hours. Why not 10?
Counsel, you make some good points about the evidence in the case, and it's easy for me to understand why this case went to trial and that these issues were hotly contested. But as Judge Werke expressed earlier, you know, as an appellate court, we're going to review this district court's decision with the standard of review you noted for findings of fact, so clearly erroneous, which, you know, in all candor, the record, by my review, does support the district court's findings. Could the district court have come out differently on the issues that you mentioned? So, for instance, the billing practices, there was evidence supporting your position as well, but the district court rejected it. So our court is not inclined to simply, we don't reweigh the evidence, we don't make credibility determinations. So with that in mind, you know, our standard of review, I mean, help me understand how you should get relief on appeal.
I understand it is a high standard to undo the findings of fact in a bench trial. But in addition to this court, I think, can also reverse the district court for an abuse of discretion for its application of law, for an error in its application of law in the unjust enrichment claim. And as I explained before, the error the court made in its application for the unjust enrichment claim relates to the fact that the parties here, nobody disputes this, had a time and materials agreement where they would pay the actual cost, where Pocahontas would be charged the actual cost, and there would be no upcharge to the materials or subcontractors. Nevertheless, despite that agreement, and despite the court finding that as well, the court allowed the respondents to keep the overpayment of the materials of $1,600 and an overpayment of the subcontractor costs exceeding $10,000. And I think that that's an abuse of discretion in its application of law for unjust enrichment. Unless the court has any other questions for me, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal. Looks like my time is about up. So.
Thank you very much. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honor. I am David Jones. I'm representing Paul Cassidy and Irish Excavating. May it please the court, counsel, Mr. Cassidy. Your Honor, I would ask the court to consider that there were essentially two narratives that were going on throughout this entire matter. Through the trial brief, through the trial, through the post-trial submissions, through Judge Haynes' decision, and through the post-trial motions, there were two narratives. There was the narrative from Jim Gander saying what his version of the world was, and he had some supporting employees saying as well what he thought. And then there was Paul Cassidy's narrative, his version of what happened. And Judge Hain here, as the trial court judge, she did what trial court judges are supposed to do. She saw the actual testimony of the parties. She evaluated their credibility, and she adopted the narrative that was put forward by Paul Cassidy. The plaintiffs were afforded the opportunity to convince Judge Hain of the errors of her ways in a post-trial motion, and that motion was denied. This then would be...
All right, what about the murky area, though, where your client couldn't explain the discrepancy in the billing, and he said maybe I've misplaced an invoice, and he couldn't figure something out. I mean, that was kind of a big area of confusion, and I don't know that it ever got reconciled for record purposes.
I actually think it did get resolved by Judge Hain. It's a matter of credibility. It is apparent with respect to a $1,600 charge for materials. The final invoices that Mr. Cassidy submitted and was paid on that were received into evidence showed a $1,600 payment for materials. It is correct that quite some time later when this matter was sued out, Mr. Cassidy could not find the underlying invoice for that $1,600 worth of materials. But I believe that Judge Hain correctly viewed that as a matter of credibility, that the final invoices for that $1,600 prepared at the time, prepared contemporaneously, those invoices were correct. The fact that Mr. Cassidy could not find one piece of paper years later, I think, was resolved by Judge Hain as a matter of credibility. As for the $10,000 of subcontractors, we addressed that actually in the brief. The summary did not take into consideration Mr. Cassidy's truck usage. And so, again, the invoices are correct because they included Mr. Cassidy's own trucks, which he billed. The summaries, which show this $10,000 missing, don't include those trucks. I would ask the court to conclude that Judge Hain actually did address both of those two ambiguities. Another small point. I don't believe that there was ever an agreement between the parties that my client would not impose an upcharge. He typically, in his work, does add a percentage to the materials and to the subcontractors, but in order to keep the costs down on this project...
And clearly, that's the reason for the litigation. There was nothing in writing, and we have your client thinking it was one way and Mr. Gander believing it was another way.
But he chose not to do an upcharge, as he typically does, because he was getting pressure, and the record reflects this, to keep costs down in the project, so he chose not to add that upcharge. I would not characterize that as an agreement between the parties. I would characterize it as a choice Mr. Cassidy made.
So do you agree with the description of the record that we hear from appellant's counsel, which is, you know, and I've read in detail the district court's findings, that there is a finding that Mr. Cassidy, in fact, did have an upcharge because we have the bills that he has produced. The backup for the subcontractor charges don't match. the passing on of the subcontractor charge to Gander?
No, I don't agree with that.
Okay.
Because
you've already explained the $1,600
yes.
difference. So how do you explain the subcontractor difference?
And the $10,000 one, there was no upcharge for that. The summaries just did not include the trucks that Mr. Cassidy, his own trucks that had been included in the invoices. The invoices accurately show, the final set of invoices accurately show the truck usage. The summaries do not include that. And I believe that Judge Hain did address that. So no, there was no upcharge. And an upcharge would be a 10 or 15% added on above the actual invoice that Mr. Cassidy received. He chose not to do that in this case to keep costs down.
I'm noting at Judge Haynes finding number 41, she does use the term he chose rather than that it was agreed upon. So your statement seems to bear out what the district court determined.
And I think the findings 41, 42, and 43 are particularly important in this case because they do speak to my client billed this project out as he typically bills out projects of this nature. It is correct that Jim Gander had a different idea of how he thinks these should be done. He had employees who spoke to how they thought it should be done. But Mr. Cassidy found his and implemented his standard practice in this case, and that's what Judge Hain agreed with. I agree that this is a case where findings are entitled to deference unless they are clearly erroneous. I do not see any clearly erroneous findings on the issue of unjust enrichment or fraud. I know we've only spoken about unjust enrichment. Because of the absence of an overpayment, I don't see how we can ever get to an issue of morally wrong or illegality for an excessive payment. And as to fraud, we haven't spoken to that, but it's our position that there is just absolutely no fraud in this case at all. There could theoretically have been fraud if Mr. Cassidy had never communicated with Mr. Gander about all the problems that he was encountering on the project, the water main, the bad soils, the relocation of the facility, the fact that it went from a half basement to a full basement. If Mr. Cassidy had never communicated any of that, that theoretically could be a basis for fraud. But Mr. Cassidy was very forthcoming, and Mr. Gander's response always was, keep going. And that's what my client did. My client's position that he has earned every penny that he was paid. He was not paid excessively. There was no fraud, and there was no unjust enrichment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have you concluded? I just want to make sure, counsel.
I have. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you for the, any rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I'll wait till the clock gets set. All right. Thank you, Your Honor. I'll address going backwards what was argued by counsel. First, the difficulty of this project that respondents earned everything that was paid to him. Essentially, respondents are arguing that the project was more complicated than initially discussed, you know, that there were two other issues that popped up while he was there working. That was the extra work to relocate a water main and the extra work to correct bad soils. I think that's none of that really matters because this is a time and materials job.
Well, but you've alleged not only, I mean, we talked about the unjust enrichment, but you've also alleged that there was fraud. And I read through the materials and I'm trying to decide which piece of evidence you feel most strongly supports something as significant as a fraud claim. Is there one thing you want to point out to us that in your opinion speaks volumes as to the requirements for a fraud?
Yes, Your Honor. The fraud claim arises not from the representation of Mr. Cassidy that he could complete this project for $50,000 or less, which was a representation made at the beginning, and that's the representation that the court focused on in its findings. The representation that Pocohogo complains of is the representations of Mr. Cassidy at a September 15 meeting when he was demanding payment. At that meeting, he was demanding payment on his invoices, and Mr. Gander called the meeting. They all got together, and Mr. Gander said, look, I'm a bit shocked by your invoices, And I want the backup invoices for your material providers and subcontractors and for your own, your actual time for your own work. And Mr. Cassidy's representations at that time was that these invoices are accurate and they're owed and I need to be paid. And I'll produce the backup invoices. And so relying on those representations, Mr. Gander authorized payment to respondents. The problem was is that payment exceeded the value of the materials that were contributed to this project and the value of the subcontractor time that contributed to this project. And it exceeded the time of 134 hours, which is the time that respondents put in into this project. And so that's where the fraud claim arose. Now, I don't believe the fraud claim is Pocahontas' strongest claim. I think it's the unjust enrichment claim. I'd like to also address the material overcharge of $1,600 that was argued by counsel. The respondents claim that that material overcharge was for an invoice that was lost or misplaced. Respondents at trial, however, failed to provide any evidence whatsoever as to what the materials that amount covered, who provided those materials, where they were provided, how they were provided, and specifically the district court made findings on that. The district court in finding number 68 found, and I quote, Cassidy's bill for materials on its final invoices was $1,651 more than what it was billed for those same materials. So I believe the district court took into consideration Mr. Cassidy's testimony and disagreed with it. This was an overcharge for the materials when the parties agreed, and the court found there would be no upcharge. The court abused its discretion, I think, in concluding that respondents were not unjustly enriched by at least this amount. With regard to the subcontractor overcharge of $10,902, respondents also claim that that amount was for unaccounted dump trucks by Mr. Cassidy and should have been added to the subcontractor charge exhibit. Again, respondents failed to provide any evidence whatsoever at trial of what days this phantom truck was running with the driver, who the driver was, what the materials were being trucked, where they were being trucked from, and where they were being trucked to. And again, the court made a specific finding on this. It's finding number 71. And I quote, Cassidy's bill for subcontractor time on its final invoice was $10,902.50 more than when it was billed for those same subcontractors. So again, this was an overcharge for the subcontractors when the parties agreed, and the court found there was going to be no upcharge. So we believe the court abused its discretion in concluding that respondents were not unjustly enriched by this amount. So I'd like to conclude, Your Honors, by respectfully requesting that this court reverse the district court and direct it to enter judgment in favor of Pocahontas on its unjust enrichment claim, or alternatively on its fraud claim, for damages in amount of $41,168 as an overpayment to respondents. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you for the argument and the briefing. The court will take this under advisement, and a decision will be issued within 90 days.